Welcome to Face to Face. Face to Face is an in-depth look at the life and career of a popular sports figure from a Christian perspective. Now, here's your host of Face to Face, Tom Rust.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome to Face to Face. We're glad to have you with us. Hope you're doing well. It is basketball season. There's no doubt about that. And when we talk about basketball, we always like to talk about the friends that we have in basketball, friends who are in coaching, friends who have been past players, present players, and certainly a lot of players out there who know Jesus Christ and have Jesus Christ in their life. And it's a real privilege to have with us today a guy that's not just a person that we have interviewed, not just a person who I haven't watched play, but who I've watched be a part of the Indiana University basketball scene because he was the TV commentator for a number of years. But he's one of my closest friends, and his name is John Laskowski. Now, that name, if you're an Indiana University basketball fan, that name will probably be someone that you know pretty well, particularly if you remember back to the days of when Indiana University was one of the top teams in the country back in the 70s, back in 75, 76, when they had the Bob Knight team, the team that went undefeated. John Laskowski was called Super Sub. Now, he was there in 75 when they did not quite get there, and he was not there in 76, I don't believe, when they went 32 and 0. But John Laskowski has become a very close friend. In fact, he's a board member for Face to Face, so he's not only one of my interview people that we've interviewed. He's not only a friend, but he is a person that I work for. He's one of my bosses. And not only that, he's a person that has had a lot of responsibility in my life. In fact, for a number of years, from 2000 to 2006, I was the chaplain for Indiana University men's basketball. I think I'm the only one I've ever had, at least the only one I've probably had in the last 50 years or so. And directly responsible for that was John Laskowski. So I owe a lot to him. So he's our guest today. We did an interview with him a couple of years ago. We sat down. We talked about basketball. And he's the one that we have on our show today, and I hope you enjoy the interview. So we'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk to John Laskowski, super sub of the Indiana University Hoosiers. We'll take a break and be back. You're listening to Face to Face. All right, welcome to Face to Face. Glad to have you with us today. And today we have a special guest. Our guest is John Laskowski. He's the former Indiana University basketball player. Back in the 70s, unofficially, he's an ambassador for Indiana University basketball, and gosh, just about all of Indiana University since the 70s. And Laz, as he and I have been longtime friends, it's kind of a disclaimer. This is like interviewing my brother. I feel like John and I have been brothers. He's a member of the Face to Face board, and he has done so much to help me. And we haven't done an interview in a long time. It's good to do this.
Yeah, I think we did the first one back in the 90s sometime. There's a lot of water on the bridge since then.
No doubt about that. Let's talk a little bit about your career, Indiana University basketball. Right up front, first of all, thanks for the sacrifices that you've made for me and for Face to Face. But let's talk about you. You came from South Bend in 1971? Was that when you walked on campus at Bloomington?
Senior year at high school was 1971. So in the fall, I came to Bloomington. The man and I was just an 18-year-old. Wet behind the ears, didn't know much about the world, and got a chance to play basketball at Indiana University. What a great opportunity.
Yeah, and you came as a freshman when freshmen weren't allowed to play varsity basketball. In fact, I think 71 might have been the last year that was the case. I think 72 freshmen were made eligible.
That's exactly right. It was the last year, so we had a freshman team. I think we played 8 or 10 games that year, and we'd get in a car and drive to Cincinnati and Columbus, wherever, and play games. Had a few home games as well. And then the next year, when Quinn Buckner and Jim Cruz came on to campus, freshmen were eligible. In fact, they were the starting guards that year. We went to the Final Four in 1973. Their freshman year, my sophomore year, and got beat by Bill Walton and a great UCLA team They want to win the title that year.
Were you recruited by Lou Watson? I mean, Bob Knight is such a legacy in Indiana, it's almost that people forget that there was a coach before him. Did Lou Watson come after you?
So there was the Lou Watson who coached in the 60s and up to the 70s. And then in 1970, he stopped, and Jerry Oliver finished out that year.
Okay.
But was never contacted by Indiana. Not until Bob Knight got the job did I get a call from Indiana and get a chance to look at the wonderful place this is.
You played in South Bend. You were right down the street from Notre Dame. What was the recruiting like, and what was your feelings about coming to Indiana University?
You know, it's kind of, as you look back on things, it looks like God does have a plan for your life, because that would have made the most sense for me. I lived in South Bend. Notre Dame was the campus. Notre Dame offered me a scholarship in January to come to school there. And my high school coach called me out of my class that day and said, I got to tell you this, you're going to go to Notre Dame if you want. And I said, oh my gosh, coach, that's the greatest thing ever. He said, you finish out the year, we'll get everything worked out, and next fall you'll go to Notre Dame. I couldn't have been happier. And I visited the campus in the spring and did my official visit, and I went to the banquet. They honored Austin Carr, the great scorer for Notre Dame, and I think he got 63 points that year in Dayton in the NCAA tournament, still an NCAA record. And they introduced me as a prize recruit, and welcome to Notre Dame, and I couldn't have been happier. The next day, they fired the coach. Johnny D was the coach at Notre Dame. They let him get through the banquet. They used to have banquets back in the day, and they fired him. And they hired a young man named Digger Phelps from Fordham. And Moose Krause, the athletic director, called Digger in his office. He said, Digger, we got this local kid. He's done a great job here. The community loves him. The community doesn't know who you are. You can get this kid in here, get the community behind you. This is a great setup for you. And Digger said, no, I don't want to do that. He said, I play East Coast ball. I don't want any Midwest kids. They don't play the ball I want to play. So call him up and tell him he can't come. And they did.
Wow.
They called and said, I'm sorry, I've had a coaching change, and you can't come to Notre Dame. And, man, it just broke my heart. I thought, well, life is not fair. That's one of the first things you learned, what I learned about it. But as I mentioned, God has a plan for your life, and it worked out so much better at Indiana than I think it would have at Notre Dame.
You came and you played for Coach Knight, and your first impression of Coach Knight, he had been on a championship team in 1960 with Jerry Lucas and John Havlicek. He came off the bench, and Coach Knight comes in. He came from Army. What were your first impressions of Coach Knight?
Well, he was very disciplined, and it was this way or no way, my way or no way. And he got on you. When you made a mistake, he got on you. But he also knew that you could get a lot of things done. You get 12 guys working hard, and they think they can, trying to become good teammates. And we did very well. I really embarrassed myself the first time we met. He actually flew me in a little plane. It was about an 8-seater plane, a commercial plane from South Bend to Indianapolis. And I'd never been on a plane before.
Oh.
And, you know, that's kind of a scary experience. And my ears had popped, and I really couldn't hear very well getting off the plane. And I got in the car with him, and he was driving, and assistant coach Bob Wetlick was in the passenger seat, and I was in the back seat. So coach starts his recruiting pitch right as we get in the car, and we've got an hour drive to Bloomington, all right? And he's driving, talking into the windshield, and I'm sitting in the back seat and can't hear very well at all, and so I don't answer any questions, if he did ask me, because I couldn't really hear him. He probably thought, this is the dumbest kid I've ever been with. He doesn't say a word. But we overcame that obstacle, and he gave me a chance to go to Indiana, and I jumped on it. I remember my high school coach saying, now look, you know, you get a lot of mid-major offers here, you know, from good schools here in the Midwest. You're going to play at these schools. He said, Indiana, you may not play. It's a Big Ten school, and none of the Big Ten schools are after you. Would you go to Indiana if you sat the bench your whole career just to get an education? I said, absolutely. I want to be a business major. And if I never played, I could do that. Well, I got to play. That was the icing on the cake. And it turned out just wonderful.
You and Bob Knight and another, I think Steve Green was one of the key players on your freshman year. You two were looked at as coming on. Of course, you were freshmen. You were ineligible to play. Tell me a little bit about, you told about that year, but tell me a little bit about you and Steve Green.
Yeah, Steve was the same year I was, really good forward, 6'7", good shooter, great player, and wonderful teammate. And so our sophomore year, we were just starting to play in the varsity, and this was all new to us. You know, how are we going to get, you know, into this lineup? And I remember we had an inter-squad game, And we got called in the next day for a film session, just he and I, the only two guys. We got called in. And the coach, assistant coach, is there with us, and he's going through this film. And he's saying, is that all the faster you can run? Can't you guard your guy any better than that? And it just ripped us the whole film. Like, well, where's the other guys? How come nobody else is in here? And what I realized was they'd evaluated the film and said, we're missing two spots. We need Green and Laz to come through this year to fulfill the team that we need to have. And that's why they were on us. Yeah. And, man, I started running fast up and down the court, started guarding my guy. And I got to play, and we ended up at the Final Four. So it was a film session that paid off well.
Indianapolis Star author Terry Hutchins wrote a book called Missing Banners about IU teams that should have won national championships and didn't. Everyone knows the 1976 team went 32-0, but he says the 1975 team that you were on might have been a better team, might have been perhaps the greatest team that Indiana University's ever had. Tell me about that team.
It was a terrific team. You know, my junior year, 1974, there were no seniors on the team. It was all freshmen, sophomores, and juniors, including Steve Green and myself. And so it was a great year to learn with each other what our roles were, because the next year the exact same team came back, okay? So we ended up winning the Big Ten Championship my junior year. And so the senior year, it was like, we can do this again, and how much farther can we go? You know, and so we start off, and nobody's beaten us. We go to Kansas, and we beat Kansas. We play Kentucky at home, beat Kentucky by 24 points in Assembly Hall. And then we play at Michigan, one of the first games of the Big Ten. And looking back, talking to assistant coach Dave Bliss, he said, Coach Knight felt that if we could beat Michigan, we could have run the table, because it was a road game. When I played Indiana, the 3 years I played, we never lost a home Big Ten game. So we knew we could win all the home games. It was the road games that were tough. We beat Michigan and, of course, ran the table, 18-0 in the Big Ten. There were 10 teams at the time, so you played everybody home and away. And we finished 18-0. Began the tournament play, and Scott May had broken his arm in the Purdue game. And we still won 7 more games after that. And he played a few minutes in the Kentucky game, our game we lost, but he couldn't really finish. And Kentucky beat us by 2 points. And that was the last game of the year. So we were 31-0, ranked number one in the country, lost the last game, and then UCLA ended up winning the championship. And John Wooden's last game, they beat Kentucky for the national championship.
Very close. And you were known as Super Sub. In fact, that was a title. I'm not sure who gave you the title, but you came off the bench during those times and actually had your picture on Sports Illustrated, on the Sports Illustrated cover. I don't know that any quote-unquote reserve player has ever had a single picture on Sports Illustrated other than you.
It is. Bob Hamill, the famous sports writer here from the paper in Bloomington, gave me that nickname when I came off the bench as a sophomore. And Coach Knight called me in the office my senior year, before the senior year. He said, you've really done a great job. You've earned the right to be a starter. He said, I never got to be a starter at Ohio State. I always wanted to, and I want to give you a chance to be a starter. He said, if you want to start, you tell me, and I'm going to put you in the lineup. And we had a young guard coming up, Bob Wilkerson from Anderson. Man, that guy, 6'7", he jumped center, he could guard. And when I saw another team watch Buckner and Wilkerson try to play defense, they could guard those guys. I said, Coach, let's just leave it the way it is. Put Wilkerson and Buckner in there. I'll come off the bench. And that's what happened. So I was actually a sub for all 3 years. And Sports Illustrated came to a story on us when we came number one that February of 75. And the writer also thought it was unique to have a sub come in and be like a sixth starter, if you will, and enough that he put my picture on the cover. There's a poster now that I just got from IU. They've put a poster together of all 12 Sports Illustrated covers of players or coaches that have been on the cover.
Yeah.
And the very first one, they did it by date, is me. I ended up being the very first player coach at Indiana University to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Now, you're talking about a Polish kid from the west side of South Bend who never started a game, and I'm the first guy ever on the cover of Sports Illustrated. There is a God, Tom, I'm telling you, because things like that don't happen by circumstance.
John Laskowski, Laz, is our guest. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about his personal life, so don't go away. You're listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. Our guest is my brother, like I've said, John Laskowski, a close friend, member of the Face to Face board, and a guy who has opened a ton of doors, including getting me the opportunity to be the IU basketball team chaplain from 2000 to 2006. 1976, kind of an interesting year. You guys came that close to winning the NCAA title. Then you move on. You're, I think, playing for the Chicago Bulls, and you're watching the 76 team go unbeaten and win that title. What were your thoughts?
You know, that was. 75 came so close. And the difference between the two teams, Steve Green and I had graduated, so it's all the same players except those two. And they moved Abernathy in to take Steve Green's place as the starter. And so that's why some people would say the 75 team was better, because we had Green and myself plus all the guys from the 76 team. And Aber had a great year. He played very well. And obviously we'd follow the team. I got to see him when they played Northwestern, being in with the Bulls, went to the game and saw them play. But the resolve that they had, it started in the locker room in Dayton, Ohio, when we lost that game. Guys are crying. I'm crying. And it kind of, Coach Knight said, you know, let's not let this happen again. You know, you guys were good enough to win this whole thing, and next year, most of you are back. Let's make this thing happen. So right from that day in March of 75, they started to plan for March of 76. And I think the resolve and the knowing we can get this thing done was better with that team than it was in the 75 team, because it hadn't happened before. And so what they learned that year, similar to our junior year going into the senior year, that we could make this thing happen. And they had a lot closer games in 76. Benson Cruz threw up a wild shot that Benson tipped in. They beat Michigan that year on that shot. And many other times they had some close games. But they were able to have that power to come through and win it. And that's why, in fact, today it's still the last undefeated national champion, right, in Indiana in 1976.
Let's talk about your life a little bit. Of course, faith is very important to you now, but how important was faith to you during those days?
You know, it wasn't very important at all. You know, basketball was very important. It was how much better can we get and how good can the team be? And I didn't really put a lot of thought into God and praying. And it was just about, you know, getting a degree and trying to be the best basketball team and player that we could be and go on, try to play in the pros and kind of live life, have fun, if you will, without thinking, how does all this come together? It's sometimes at a later date when you realize, boy, did all these things happen for a reason, or is it just coincidence that Notre Dame fired their coach and I ended up in Indiana? And I think as you look back on things, it's easier to say that there was a plan. I didn't really know it at the time, but God really orchestrated a lot of things in my life to get me to this point.
And when did Jesus Christ actually become part of your life?
That would have been in 1992, so I was kind of along in years there. You know, I was in my late 30s, but just started to figure out, you know, how come I'm getting so many bad breaks here, and how come there's a uneasy feeling? What's this all about? Are we just going to try to make money and have some fun and die? Is that what life's about? And you ask these questions, and a friend of mine invited me to a lunch the Christians and Businessmen's group put on, and a speaker talked about how God had impacted his life and that there was no circumstances that God didn't know about, that's all part of the plan, and to get you to a certain spot where you can help other people. And that's really what I think changed my look as why do you want to make a bunch of money and have a bunch of fun? The real thing in life is to help other people to move forward and find out what God's plan is for their life and how they can help other people. And that started to become more important in the 90s after that decision for Christ.
How did that radically change your life? What changes did you go through as a result of that?
Well, I mean, I think then you start look at the world a different way. Like, why is this happening? Well, God's behind it, and He'll help me see it through it. Let's just go forward. I'd been the color commentator for Indiana basketball. I started in 1979, and it was a wonderful job on WTTV Channel 4. A lot of your listeners have probably remember the old days on Channel 4 with Chuck Marlowe,
yep,
and John Laskowski doing the games on TV. And Coach Knight had called me in the office after I left the Bulls and said, I want you to be my color commentator on TV. In the late 70s, and I said, Coach, I don't know anything about TV. You know I'm kind of shy. I mean, what do you have to do to be on TV? He said, well, look, you know the offense, the defense I'm trying to run. Explain to the people why things are going on there. And he said, when the red light comes on, start talking. So that's all I knew about TV. But Chuck Marlowe was great to work with. He asked me questions, and I was able to answer them. And then in 92, Chuck was leaving the play-by-play booth, and coach decided to make a change, and so he really had the right to pick the announcers he wanted, and so he was going to have Joe Hillman, who played on an 87 national championship team, play, do the play-by-play, and Ted Kitson and I were going to be two guys in the color commentator booth. So it'd be three former IU players doing the game, and we did a practice game. And it was on TV. Joe was in the play-by-play role, which he'd never done before. And I remember coming home that night to see my wife, Alice, and said, "Honey, what'd you think of the game?" And she said, "You know, that was the worst game you've ever done." He said, "Joe didn't know what to do, and you and Ted are talking over each other." She said, "Honey, you got to agree. You got to tell me you'll never agree to be the play-by-play announcer. It's just too hard a job." And I said, "You're right, honey. I've never done that, and I know Joe struggled today, so I'm not going to do that." And sure enough, the next day, the TV station called and said, "Look, this isn't working out." And Coach Knight called me in his office. He said, "Look, I'm going to make another change." He said, "I want you to be the play-by-play announcer, yeah, and Ted Kitch will be the color commentator. And we'll not have Joe on the broadcast." And you know, Tom, it was only 12-13 hours or so since I had that little chat with my wife that I wouldn't do it, and I said, "Sure, Coach, I'll do it." So I knew I was in trouble, because we had a game in 5 days against Notre Dame in South Bend, and I had a good friend of mine, Larry Browning. He invited me to that lunch where I heard about Christ and that God had planned for life, and he would see you through tough situations. I said, "Larry, you and I got to drive up there, and you got to pray for me that I'll somehow be able to do this play-by-play thing, because I don't know what I'm doing. I've never done it before, and I'm on statewide TV, and I could bomb in front of millions of people," which is what my wife was afraid of. And we drove up there together, and the game went on, and it went exactly 2 hours. And as you know, Tom, that's important, because there's no time to fill, because I wouldn't know how to fill time. It went 2 hours, went off the air, and Matt Nover hit a shot late in the game, and Indiana beat Notre Dame, so it was a close game. And the TV station called the next day, and they said, "We reviewed the tape from last night's game, and we have some comments for you." They said, "You didn't do nearly as bad as we thought you'd do."
That was a real compliment.
Now think about that. That's a backhanded compliment, because they were thinking really low level, and I at least exceeded that to be mediocre, I guess is what you might call it. And I said, "Well, that's great." I said, "Why don't you just let me finish the year and then give me back to caller, and then you get somebody else in here who knows what they're doing?" And they said, That'd be fine. Well, it ended up being I was a pretty good straight man for Ted Kitchell, and he was just a wonderful color guy. He would say things and really liven up the broadcast, and we had a wonderful time doing it. The year ended, and they said, "Man, there's no way we can leave you guys. You guys are terrific." And so for 9 more years, Ted and I did the color. And you know, Tom, if I hadn't had the confidence that God wanted me in that position, I would have fought and turned that job down. And in fact, I was able to get through it and do well, because the confidence I had that God would see me through it, not my ability, but that God could see me through it and for a good cause. And that's how I became a play-by-play announcer.
Well, as our time is up, tell me, if you will, do you have a favorite verse?
Romans 8:28, "All things happen for the good of those who believe, are called according to God's purpose." And you see the things that happen in your life, and you say, "What do you mean Notre Dame's not going to let me come to college there? How in the heck is that? Could that be good for my life?" And I'm here to tell you that years later, it did turn out good. So if you see, bad things happen to good people. We know that happens all the time. And if you know there's a bigger plan that God has, it all works out for the good.
John Leskowski's been our guest. Thanks again. Thanks for being a great friend. Thanks for being a great interview. And I'm sure we're going to spend much more time together.
Good luck with you, Tom, and the rest of your career with Face to Face.
All right. John Leskowski, former super sub for Indiana University. We'll take a break and be back. You're listening to Face to Face. Welcome back to Face to Face. Always a good time with John. And since I think we did this interview, John has gotten into the business of the restaurant business. He has a Culver's. I'm going to give him a free plug now. I hope maybe he'll give me a free meal for this. But John has a Culver's in Bloomington. It's on 3rd Street in Bloomington, Indiana, if you ever get to Bloomington. And it's somewhat of a shrine to Indiana University basketball. And it has become, over the last year or so that it's been open, it has become a place where Indiana University students work, and it's become a place where various icons of basketball come and go. In fact, just not long ago at all, just a couple weeks ago, I saw a picture where Bob Knight showed up to get his ice cream there at Culver's. That's the first time that I've seen Bob Knight do anything in a public appearance in Indiana University in a long time. But there was on Facebook, there was a picture of Bob Knight, John Laskowski, and John's son Scotty, who actually runs the Culver's restaurant there in Bloomington. So that was kind of fun to see. And John's just a tremendous guy, has a tremendous testimony, loves the Lord, and everything he does, whether it's announcing or playing or whether he's running his restaurant, whatever it is, he's dedicated that to the honor and glory of our Lord and Savior, and we really appreciate what he does. I got to get over there. I haven't been over there in a while. Anyway, hope that you enjoyed the show today, and if you like this show and you want to hear others, we hope that you'll go to our website. Our website is at facetofaceradio.com, and we have a number of things on there, and particularly as we get down toward the Christmas season, we've got a new Christmas, what we call a Christmas prayer letter, that's going to be on there, and I hope you'll take time to read that. There's some pretty fantastic people that have been on the show, and one of the people that we'll mention here real quick, I don't know if we've mentioned this before, but we've had Matt Hergis on the show many, many times. He's another one of those persons that I consider a very close friend, and just was named the pitching coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and boy, I'll tell you, really, we are excited about that, and we praise the Lord for Matt and know that he will do a tremendous job. Hey, as we close today, I want to take you to a real short verse, Psalm 105:4, and here's what it says: look to the Lord and his strength, seek his face always. Not many words there, but words with tremendous power, and that's certainly what we want to do. Look to the Lord and his strength, seek his face always. That's about it for us. We look forward to having you back next week. We'll have another Christian athlete. Till then, this is Tom Russ saying, remember this, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, be a good sport. Bye.
You've been listening to Face to Face with Tom Russ. For a free copy of today's program or for more information, please write to Face to Face Ministries, P.O. Box 125, Columbus, Indiana 47202. You can also find us on the web at facetofaceradio.com. Join us again next week as Tom Rust goes face to face.